Every day, mankind uses about 28 billion kilowatt hours of energy. Now, for some perspective, for the average American family to use that much, it would take roughly 2.5 million years. Add to that a growing world population and growing world economy, and you can see the challenges before us. Today on Town Hall Ohio, we're going to hear some industry experts' thoughts on what it's going to take to have the policies and practices in place to serve our nation and the nation's energy needs.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
The United Nations estimates that the world's energy consumption will increase by about 50% in just the next 22 years. Now, Ohioans are going to use a lot of that, and we're going to produce a lot of it as well. Our state's natural gas production, 21 times greater than just 5 years ago. We are the 13th largest coal-producing state, and we're a top 10 oil refining and electricity generation state. We're the 8th largest producer of ethanol, and we're home to growing numbers of wind farms, biomass fuel generators, and solar collectors. To help us sort out what we have and, more importantly, what we might need, we have a great panel of guests joining us today. Sam Randazzo is with the Industrial Energy Users of Ohio. Awesome Hawk is chairman and CEO of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. And Dale Arnold heads up our energy programs at the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. Dale, I'm not going to welcome you. You've been here too much. But Awesome and Sam, glad to have you on Town Hall Ohio.
Good morning, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
So, Awesome, we're going to start with you before we start drilling down into a variety of energy topics. Maybe give us a high-level version of when the average Ohioan thinks energy policy, what should she or he be thinking about?
Thank you, Joe, and thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. It's a pleasure. As Joe mentioned, my name is Awesome Hawk. I'm the chairman of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. Public Utilities Commission of Ohio regulates electricity, natural gas, telecommunications, transportation, rail, and a partridge in a pear tree. We've got quite a few areas of regulation that I think Ohioans would be surprised to know that we regulate, including moving companies. So we've got quite a few areas that we regulate. With respect to energy specifically, sound energy policy for the Public Utilities Commission is energy policy that really adheres to the mission of the organization. That mission is to ensure the delivery of safe, reliable utility services at fair prices. Now, from purely an electricity standpoint, the Public Utilities Commission's in a unique spot now, living in a deregulated world. Your typical electricity bill usually consists of three primary components: generation, transmission, and distribution. So the PUCO really and truly regulates the distribution component of that bill. It's got some authority through the Power Siting Board, which is another entity on transmission, but generation is now totally a competitive, deregulated space.
Sam, how about a little bit about the organization you represent, the Industrial Energy Users of Ohio, and then the same question, what is sound energy policy from your constituents' viewpoint?
Joe, thank you, and thanks to the Farm Bureau for having us here today and talking about energy. So the organization that I'm general counsel for is the Industrial Energy Users of Ohio. It has been around in a formal way since 1992, and we have, on behalf of Ohio businesses, engage in issues at the state, federal, and regional level that affect the price and availability. Those two things are important, both price and availability of energy that the businesses need to keep their doors open and to also compete in their particular sectors. And many of the companies that we represent compete internationally. And with regard to policy, I think one, if I could just take off of Chairman Hawk's description here, the policy in the energy area really hasn't changed all that much for hundreds and hundreds of years, going back to Henry VIII in England. And so the, you know, I typically referred to a quote from Franklin Roosevelt, which he gave in 1932 during his efforts to succeed as a candidate for president. And he said that the public utility services need to be satisfactory, cheap enough, but we also need to be mindful of making the investment safe enough to harvest the benefits that come from deployment of private capital. And those three things conflict at times, but they have to be in the right balance. And that's the challenge that people like Chairman Hawk deal with every day.
Dale, here at Farm Bureau, we've got staff members that specialize in everything. And frankly, you've been on the show as many as times as any of our coworkers have.
Yeah.
Why is energy so important to the farm community?
It's interesting because next to labor, energy in the form of electricity or fuel is their largest single input. And it's been our job here to help them control those energy costs for a number of years. We're helping our members, residential, small mercantile, local communities, create a toolbox. They want to be able to have a number of rules, regulations in place, a number of programs they can choose from, a number of technologies they can employ on the farm, the home of the business, to help them control that and give them better decision-making with regard to utilization of energy in the future.
So all of you mentioned affordability, availability. You don't have to be an energy expert to recognize that those kind of things are important. One of the things that we see in the food space happening a lot is expectations on farmers to address issues besides safe, affordable, available food. We're being asked to address social type issues too, whether it's the environment, whether it's workers' rights, whatever. Awesome. Is that creeping into the energy policy space like it is the food space?
Absolutely. The clean energy revolution, I would say, has been a sort of real disruptor to typical energy regulation that we've seen over the many decades, or Sam mentioned the concept of centuries of utility delivery and even regulation. The clean energy revolution, when you think about the concepts of affordable and reliable, clean energy, while undoubtedly has its merits for its ability to produce power with zero carbon and creating a cleaner environment, doesn't sometimes fit neatly into sort of the policy rubric of the PUCO. So if you've got power that is cheaper than the power that clean energy or wind turbines or solar panels, et cetera, can produce, how do you incorporate that into the rubric of what the PUCO and other branches of state government do? If you've got these clean energy sources that possibly are less reliable if the wind doesn't blow or the sun doesn't shine, how does that get incorporated into the policy rubric of state government? What I have said a number of times since the clean energy revolution has really taken off, and I've really seen that evolution over the past, we'll call it 5 to 7 years, just living at the PUCO, either tangentially through cases or as a regulator, it's here to stay, and we have to figure out how to incorporate it into our policy rubric.
Yeah, of course, the clean energy stuff is top of mind when energy comes up, because you have a lot of people tugging, pushing, pulling on institutions to try and improve their market share and their profitability and so on. So there's some interesting dynamics. I will say that from a physical perspective, the role of clean energy and how it works in conjunction with the overall structure in the electric industry, probably more controlled by the federal government than the state government. And to supplement something Chairman Hawk said, and perhaps something that might be useful to your listeners, the PUCO scope of control is limited. It does not regulate the rural co-ops, the electric co-ops. They may be involved in some way in the power siting board stuff, but PUCO does not regulate or regulate the quality of service for co-ops. The same is true with municipal electric systems or municipal gas systems. around the state. So, and that's depending upon, you know, what point in time you pick it, 10 to 15% of the population does not come under the jurisdiction of the PUCO.
Yeah, Joe, it's interesting. You're seeing this whole energy complex, generation, transmission, distribution, changing, growing, developing in a very rapid place. You have power stations, renewable as well as fossil fuel. You have transmission systems such as pipelines and transmission lines going through, local distribution circuits, power stations, and those. Much of that infrastructure is going to be placed on open ground, and many of that's going to be in rural areas on farm ground, working with farmers with effective leases, easements, contracts, working with friends and neighbors and communities on how to accommodate that infrastructure is becoming a huge issue. And consequently, Farm Bureau has been working with a number of folks to help try to address that.
Yeah, let's put a little perspective on that. One of the things that you do is go out and meet in small groups with folks all over Ohio. Just give me a quick guesstimate, Dale, on between folks wanting to know about maybe siting a solar panel array, some windmill issues, some oil and gas drilling, and some pipeline issues. How many of those meetings will you do in the course of a year?
I do anywhere between 100 and 150 and talk to about 15,000 people on those particular issues at a county level.
Man, you're on the road more than most rock stars.
Well, it's nice to be here today. You know I'm alive.
One last question in this whole policy space while we've got a minute or two left. Sam, we'll start with you. You hear the term energy security. What's that mean to you and your members?
Unfortunately, energy security is really an engineering question, fundamentally. And unfortunately, we hear most about it in a political context. And it ends up meaning whatever people want it to mean. The same is true with the often heard all of the above energy policy. Well, the practical reality here is that from an engineering perspective, you can't have everything running at the same time or the grid would collapse. So we need to organize our thinking in this area so that we're first doing stuff that makes the engineering consequence produce consistent with what our policy objective is. And it's got to be reliable. The supply's got to be adequate. And if it doesn't do that, then everything else falls apart pretty quickly.
I wholeheartedly agree with Sam. I think the concept of energy security is something that's really been politicized over the past we'll call it 5 years or so, and it all relates back to, in my opinion, what to do with an aging coal and nuclear fleet and their competitiveness in the United States, and that's really where a lot of these concepts have arisen, and you throw the concept of resilience into that entire political melee as well. From the PUCO's perspective, since we don't regulate generation anymore, what am I most concerned about? Squirrels and trees. And so when I think about security and I think about resiliency, and we've got to figure out a way to keep those squirrels doing something other than chewing on power lines.
I don't know if I'm comforted or worried that one of our state's top energy officials is worried about squirrels and trees, but I get what you're saying. We're talking energy policy. Sam Randazzo with the Industrial Energy Users of Ohio. Asim Haque is chairman and CEO of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. Dale Arnold is with Ohio Farm Bureau. We'll be back right after this.
More bass.
So Sam's not only an attorney, but a music critic. Sam, welcome back to Town Ohio. Sam Randazzo is with the Industrial Energy Users of Ohio. Dale Arnold is in the studio, and we're very privileged to have the chairman and CEO of the Ohio Public Utilities Commission in the studio with us as well. Asim Haque. Well, we talk about, you guys have done a really good job of kind of describing what policy should look like. But you also indicated that there are some things that we probably need to do better in the nation. Dale, from your perspective, from farmers and Farm Bureau's perspective, what are maybe the top one or two things that worry us in terms of where we are energy-wise in America today?
Yeah, one basically has a thing is reliability as this whole system basically transforms itself. A lot of farmers say this, is that I want it reliable, safe, and effective. When I come in, flip the switch, the lights go on, and when I need it, 724-365, it's there. That's number one. Number two, you know, it's interesting. I have to make a number of decisions going forward on how I use energy, and I want to be able to talk to some very competent folks with be able to do that, service providers and others who can help me make those decisions. And you're seeing this, and we've talked about this before in other programs, is that in the early days, there were a relative few very competent, very knowledgeable engineer types who helped do that. There are more and more service providers basically in the arena now. And having that frame of mind you have when you buy a combine or a piece of property or do financial calculations and things, you need to have that frame of mind when you start to talk about energy service providers and things.
Awesome. Besides the squirrels and trees that you told us you worried about, a little higher level concern, a challenge or two that we need to be paying attention to.
That's a wonderful question. From the Public Utility Commission of Ohio's perspective, we feel really comfortable with where we are situated right now in the state. So by the end of this year, our four investor-owned utilities, and those are AEP, First Energy, Duke, and Dayton. Sam is right. We don't regulate munis, and we don't regulate co-ops. But they will have the bulk of their major cases tied up roughly until the mid-2020s. And that deals with pricing. That deals with ways to attend to reliability issues. And so that's a real victory for the state. Where we really have to pay attention to is what's going on at the federal level with respect to generation, and specifically what to do about coal plants and nuclear plants that are finding it difficult to survive in open markets as a result of low natural gas prices, really as a result of the shale revolution. This is something that the commission has dealt with over the span of really 2013 to 2016, and it's now creeped its way up to the federal level. And why does this matter for the farming community? Because all of this can impact what you pay for power.
From the manufacturers and other industries in Ohio, to the extent that they sweat over energy, what are some of the things that worry them?
Joe, I think first of all, with regard to policy, most of our challenges today are on the implementation side of the policy. The challenges are a result of choices that are made by various stakeholders in combination with regulators and legislators and so on. And that's typically where things get going sideways. From a manufacturer, or I would say general business perspective, I would say that generally we're in my career, which spans a little more than Dale, but almost 50 years now, we are in the best position we've been from a supply and demand perspective and from a pricing perspective. Ohio has some of the lowest natural gas prices in the world, and as a result of the shale revolution, we have an abundant supply of natural gas and oil associated often with natural gas production. So from a reliability perspective, we're in a pretty good place. Remember, electricity is a secondary form of energy. You've got to use some other primary form of energy to produce electricity. So fundamentally, the electric grid is only as reliable as the primary energy forms that we're using to produce it. And on that score, we're in pretty good shape. Prices are where people spend the most time trying to put themselves in a better position to compete globally or within their particular sector.
Let me throw out a threat that I often read about, that being not nearly as knowledgeable as any of you, but it makes me worry a little bit, is this whole idea of the nation's energy infrastructure being susceptible to some type of terrorism, whether it's a cyber attack or an attack on our infrastructure. How worried should I be, guys?
Good question. I'll tell you this. We've always had that issue to deal with, even when we took a look at local infrastructure that were in towns and villages only. When you take a look at this particular system, balancing things out, loads, delivery of equipment, materials, regard to that, those checks and balances, those issues have always been discussed and always been in place before cyber events and different things and afterwards. The question is going to be continuing to ask those pressing questions and ensuring that as you go forward, those things are covered, those are addressed, that when you do come into the room and you click the light comes on.
So, Awesome, I don't imagine this specifically is under the purview of the PUCO, but as a person in the energy industry, should we be comfortable that people such as yourselves and the AEPs and the co-ops of the world and the state and federal government are at least thinking about protecting us?
Yes, I think you should feel comfortable that the folks that are in the know are thinking about protection and are doing their best to take measures for protection. So the bulk power system or the electric grid in America, its cyber standards are governed by a body called the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. Okay, and this is a collection of engineers that are really, really trying hard to promulgate the right standards for folks to follow to protect the grid as a whole. Now, cyber is a constantly moving target. Okay, so it requires you to be constantly updating yourselves from a knowledge perspective and be vigilant. But I think there is the definite hope that the right measures are being taken.
On that hopeful note, we'll be back in just a moment. We're back on Town Hall, Ohio, talking energy issues in the Buckeye State. Helping us tell that story, Awesome Hawk, the chairman and CEO of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. Sam Randazzo, he is with the Industrial Energy Users of Ohio. And Dale Arnold, our energy guru for the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation. We're going to get back to those guys in just a couple of moments, but I want to take a break from our studio guests to hit on a topic related to today's conversation. A lot of Ohio Farm Bureau members have a chance to save some money on their utility bills, and it's through a partnership we've made with Community Energy Advisors. Kevin Lauderyoung is their principal and joins us today on the show.
Community Energy Advisors is an energy consulting and brokerage firm. We shop the marketplace of competitive retail energy suppliers on behalf of our customers to identify the best prices and products for electricity and natural gas. And we're pleased to provide our services to members of the Ohio Farm Bureau.
So explain how that works, Kevin. If I'm a Farm Bureau member, I get in touch with you. What are you going to do for me, and what's going to be the benefit?
We have a process where we shop with multiple suppliers on behalf of Farm Bureau members to identify the best pricing and offer that pricing for different products to Farm Bureau members. As importantly, the contracts that we assist members to enter into, we manage those contracts for the members to make sure that they are getting the prices that they contracted for, and that at the end of the contract, they are shopping the marketplace again and finding the best market pricing at that time. This provides a layer of protection for the members, because it's commonplace that folks enter into contracts with energy suppliers and don't manage the end of the contract, and it can put them into a situation where the price that they're paying for electricity or natural gas can double or triple. We've already helped several Farm Bureau members who were in just such a predicament. They entered into a supply contract. The contract had expired, and it rolled over to a month-to-month rate. One member had a rate. They were paying a rate of 12 cents per kilowatt hour, and we were able to move them into a Farm Bureau Energy Program contract at a rate of 5.2 cents. So we effectively cut their rate in half, and it ended up saving the member $800 a year in energy spend.
So I want to emphasize that while you do work with farmers, you'll work with all Farm Bureau members, correct? So this can apply to certain residential customers as well?
That's correct. The program does offer assistance for residential utility accounts as well as commercial utility accounts.
So if a listener's interested, how do they take advantage of the Farm Bureau Energy Program, Kevin?
You know, the easiest way is to call the 800 number. That's 1-800-830-3501. Have your Farm Bureau member ID handy. And if you have copies of your recent gas and electric bill, we can ask a few questions. The information on the utility bills will be helpful, and it's a great way to understand what the Farm Bureau Energy Program may be able to do to help you save money.
Kevin Lauder-Young is with Community Energy Advisors, and for Farm Bureau members, that number is 800-830-3501. I want to turn our attention to a bigger picture issue. It's a major initiative in Ohio. It's titled Power Forward. Awesome. Tell us what that is.
Power Forward is the PUCO's attempt to pair innovation with the concept that that innovation should serve to enhance the customer electricity experience. We started this process in April of last year. We had three phases of Power Forward. We had 125 some speakers provide 100 plus hours of basically testimony to the commission. Sam Brandazzo over here, he was one of our participants and did an absolutely wonderful job. And what we're trying to do is really bring the innovation that we know exists out there to customers across Ohio.
Sam, Awesome gave us a good description of the big picture goal, but I want to walk through a couple of pieces of this. Let's start with, and we won't get it all in before the break, but let's start with technology. If we want to have this effective electric grid in Ohio, where do we start on the technology front?
First of all, I would say that the thing, let me identify something we shouldn't do, and,
sure.
And that is we shouldn't think about this from the standpoint of a particular technology or a particular supplier or try to pick winners and losers. It's going to be incredibly important from a policy perspective that we think about an open architecture, an open network, so that those people that are innovating have an opportunity to appeal directly to customers and sell based upon the merit of their good or service.
We're going to follow up on what an open architecture looks like and more pieces of Power Ohio, Power Forward, as we continue talking about energy issues here on Town Hall Ohio. Our guests, Dale Arnold from the Ohio Farm Bureau, Awesome Hawk from the Public Utilities Commission, Sam Randazzo of Industrial Energy Users of Ohio. We'll be back right after this. So we've got Sam critiquing the music and Awesome busting some moves in here. we're having a good time with the music today as we talk energy issues with Awesome Hawk of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, Sam Randazzo of the Industrial Energy Users of Ohio, and Dale Arnold with Ohio Farm Bureau. You talked about an open architecture for smart power thinking down the road. Define that more.
Well, the more complete term would be open network architecture, and it has been deployed significantly in the communications sector. And I believe that what has happened in the communications sector will be indicative of where we're going to be headed on the electric side and perhaps on the natural gas side. So if the network itself is neutral, it's a path, it's a conductor. It allows suppliers and customers to engage in commerce. And so as long as the network is not, which is a bottleneck function, which means that people who control the network have the ability to influence who gets to use the network. As long as that network is used in a neutral way, and we have institutions that are making sure that that happens, then the innovators and customers who are looking for innovation have an opportunity to meet through that network and engage in commerce based upon the merit, as judged by the individual consumer, as made available by entrepreneurs and for-profit enterprises.
Awesome, you're shaking your head in agreement, but I got to just throw this out there. If I'm one of those four major utilities in Ohio, or a co-op or a municipality that already owns the market, how welcoming am I going to be to this new world that Sam just described where everybody gets to play?
And that's exactly why we need to have the open conversation. I think that is a very, very fair concern. And what the PUCO has to do, to Sam's point, is create an environment that allows for this innovation to flourish and allows for this innovation to be deployed to customers. There will be the basic architecture, like Sam is saying. There will be the distribution grid that our utilities are going to continue to own, operate. There's going to be some investment that has to be made in order to get it up to the place where innovation can be deployed to customers. But that's exactly why, from the governmental perspective, and I'm nodding my head, especially talking about telephony. And we really look at, for instance, the deployment of the iPhone, which we all now have. We look at the internet. We look at what the FCC did in order to make these things a possibility. That's really, we're expressing the governmental will to allow for innovation to be deployed to customers. And if we're going to do it, we've got to be really thoughtful about the marketplace that we're trying to develop, per Sam.
This changing marketplace, Dale, that Sam talks about, while it's going to expand, it's already here. One of the things that farmers have gotten used to, I mean, when Grandpa bought electricity co-op, when they got it to Grandpa's farm, you know, he bought it from the co-op, and it's been that way for generations. But now farmers are actually feeding back into the system.
It is. And it's interesting for a lot of farmers. Basically, this is a paradigm shift. It's mind-bending. You know, farmers my age, and I'm a grandfather.
Young grandfather.
Yeah. I'm taking a look at it this way, is that, you know, for years I've been working with the utility. I get a bill, I pay it. The only time I really bark about it is when I think it's too high. When you're talking about the technology and the things and how it's going to change, my children understand that and look forward basically to the day that they're going to be able to make those decisions with those technologies. My grandchildren already expect it to be done and are using those systems today and telepathy and everything else, and want to make sure they use it when they start buying their own electricity for their own homes, farms, and businesses.
So besides being just a smarter consumer, explain just briefly, we've got farmers that are feeding energy back into the
grid.
Yes,
we do. We have a lot of farmers, too, that, you know, with effective relationships with leases and easements with large service providers on the farm doing that. And we also have others with regard to net metering and different things with their own power generation, different things there. If they have excess, they want to be able to efficiently and effectively sell or have that in a net metering arrangement with the utility to put it back into the system. And many of them are taking a look at, as this technology comes forward, could energy be like a crop, just like corn, wheat, and beans, and consequently want to get into that type of production too.
Real quick, and don't get too technical on me here, gotcha. Austin, but part of what you do is help determine rates for electricity in the state of Ohio. This new open infrastructure that we all think is a good idea, does that mean that you're going to have to rethink the ways that you establish electricity rates and basically the profit potential for the people that Sam said still will own the grid?
Yeah, quite possibly. We may need to think about how to evaluate utilities in possibly more of a performance-based regulatory paradigm as opposed to how we typically do things. I think that the utilities are understanding and expecting of that. But with respect to the customer side and the customer application, we're talking about rates. Data is everything. Data is king. If you don't know what you're consuming, how much, when, and why, it's very difficult to make decisions about how to better impact your bill. So through Power Forward, that's what we hope to advance.
We'll be back to wrap up our discussion on energy issues in Ohio when we continue right after this. We have lots of natural gas drilling going on in Ohio, and it's, as we learned from Sam, impacting the cost, availability, et cetera, of our electricity, which is a lot of what we're talking about. Austin was mentioning before the break there, Sam, that if you can become a smart consumer, you can really help yourself out, and you whipped out your cell phone and said, it's not that hard.
Exactly. I mean, and in thinking about this, again, from an organizational, thoughtful approach, there are opportunities for non-traditional paths other than through the distribution system of the electric utility to provide that connective path that allows technology and advances in technology to pair up with consumers to accomplish objectives. For example, I tend to be an early adopter on technology in general, but I've had a Nest thermostat in my home for years. Bryant makes a similar product. And, you know, so, and I can control the temperature in my home. And I get a report from the provider of the thermostat that tells me how much usage I have relative to some benchmark home. And I can handle, I don't need a smart meter to do that. I don't need to pay extra in my utility bill because the utility wants to deploy smart meters so that it can reduce the meter reader workforce. There are things here, I think, that we need to be thinking about a little bit differently than simply throwing money into additional investment in meters and distribution systems if we can get the same functionality that in a more effective and cheaper way.
Some tools are already paying off for farmers, Dale. I know you hear from them all the time.
On-site generation, yes. Customer-friendly interconnection over the last 10 to 15 years, yes. Worked with Sam and the folks at the Utility Commission on that. You're also going to see this is a step-by-step process with advanced metering infrastructure for many folks over the next 6 to 7 years. That digital, they're going to have a digital meter, a communication device instead of the old analog meter, which means it's going to open up avenues for other types of appliances and different things and systems on the farm, the home, the business. Getting to know those is going to be huge. Education is going to be huge.
We tend to think about this area from the perspective of generation on the customer side of the meter. But importantly, the customer's ability to manage its demand in at particular times can be a very valuable asset, and you can capture value in the marketplace from that demand management protocol. That requires information exchange.
That's correct.
And from my perspective, all of this leads to what outcome, which is the farming community knowing that energy is such a high cost for the farming community, being able to understand exactly what they're paying for and control based upon their operations, better control their energy bill based upon what they're actually doing on a day-to-day basis. And the only way to be able to do that is through information. And so getting that information to the farming community through whatever the architecture is, whatever the technology is really, really important to the Public Utilities Commission. And again, through Power Forward, that's what we're hoping to advance.
And it applies not just to farmers, but to industry, to small business, to homeowners, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Certainly industry. I can speak directly to
that. As I say, Joe, knowledge is power. Being able to know how you use energy, being able to do and utilize a number of tools, being able to make decisions is going to be critical going forward.
There's some old school things that the rural co-ops have actually been ahead of the game on in many respects. They have a system of sending out a peak alert when the system is going to peak, and it lets people know that they ought to back down their usage. They have a system where they install oversized water heaters that act as thermal storage devices, and the customers that do that get a break on the rate. They've had meters in place that customers can actually read for a long time. And so there are some old school things that are less expensive that can move us to a better place in terms of that information exchange without gold plating the electric bill.
Whether it's the PUCO or another state agency, can Ohioans come someplace online within Ohio government and start to ramp up their knowledge?
Yeah, absolutely. So for what we're doing with Power Forward, there is a Power Forward bump out on our website, PUCO.ohio.gov. It's plastered all over the place. You can look at the types of things we've been talking about at Power Forward. I encourage every consumer to go look at it, see what we're talking about. We really think that this will provide great benefit to Ohioans.
Some great information today on energy in Ohio. Our guests, Awesome Hawk, Chairman of the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, from the industrial energy users of the state, Sam Randazzo, Dale Arnold of Ohio Farm Bureau. Thanks to you guys for joining us, and thanks to everyone for tuning in this week on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.